Okay, hello everyone. Can you hear me? Okay, welcome to the AP Railo APEC Hub Capacity Building Webinars. It is 5 minutes past 1 p.m., so start. This is Kelvin Wong from the ICANN APEC Hub. With me are my colleagues from the APEC Hub and also from the at-large staff supporting this. Just to give you a bit of background, the webinar series is an initiative under the AP Railo APEC Hub Cooperation Framework, where the topics are collaboratively decided on together. And we have been doing this for a while, about bi-monthly, and other topics have included internationalized domain names, new GDLDs, and internet governance, for example. So today, the topic is DNS security and DNS abuse, domain name system security and abuse. So if you recall, last July, we had a DNS basic and DNS ecosystem webinar as well, which is done by Steve Sheng. So in a way, this is a continuation to that webinar. Our speakers for today would be Champika and Kittisak Jirawanaku. Champika is ICANN's Regional Security and Stability and Resiliency Engagement Manager for the Asia-Pacific. He's a big part of ICANN's Global Stakeholder Engagement and SSR teams, and represents ICANN in running workshops on matters related to security, technical, law enforcement, and capacity building. Kittisak is from the Information Security Agency, the Electronic Government Agency of the Ministry of Information and Communication Technology, Thailand. And he has worked in the information security area for almost 15 years. His expertise is in improving the different areas such as incident response and management, web and network security, risk management, and also awareness raising. Furthermore, he helps improve security for many government organizations, and he conducts many training courses related to information security, especially IT security awareness. I think we're in very good hands. And before we start the webinar proper, I'll hand over to Ken, our new GSE intern for APEC Hub, which will run through the housekeeping rules. Over to you, Ken.
Well, thank you, Kelvin. So a few housekeeping before we begin. If you have any questions during the webinar, please do raise them in the Q&A pod at the left. The staff will note your questions and they will be answered by the presenters either in writing or during the presentation. Questions and answers will be posted on the webinar e-page. Okay, there will be a pop quiz after each segment, so do be ready to answer the questions posted in the poll pod in Adobe Connect. At the end of the webinar, please remain on the call for about 3 minutes to answer a short 5-question evaluation survey via the pod in Adobe Connect. Your feedback will be essential if...
Okay, I believe Champika has lost the audio and the AC connection, so please bear with us and let us give just 1-2 minutes for him to log in back. Thank you very much for your patience.
And sorry for the little interruption. I suddenly lost my Adobe Connect screen, basically. Anyway, without taking much time, thanks very much for the introduction. And so today's session, as we all know, it's going to be on DNS security and DNS abuse handling. So I think Kelvin has already introduced myself and also my colleague, friend, Kittisak as well. So we will move on here. And then I also actually want to acknowledge Dev Piscitillo, the VP Security and ICT Coordination at ICANN, as well as Richard Lamb, who is also the Senior Program Manager DNSSEC at ICANN. They have contributed to these materials. Now, the agenda that we are planning to do today, initially we're going to discuss about threats and risks involved in DNS. And later we will discuss why the security or the DNS security is important. Later we'll spend a little bit of time on handling DNS abuse and what sort of tools that and techniques are available. And then we will discuss some case studies and finally wrap up after discussing about the collaboration with ICANN, especially focusing the SR or security, stability and resiliency aspects. Now, let us have a look about threats and risks in DNS. Now, as I know, we had another session earlier, a webinar, that discussed about DNS concepts and also, you know, general understanding about DNS. Now, this is kind of a continuation of that, but I will try to recap the DNS resolution process because this is very important for us to understand, especially focusing the DNS security aspects. Now here you can see that in the slide, there are a few components. First of all, we have a client, you know, this could be a user device basically, that is, in this case, it's sort of browsing a certain domain name. In this case, it is www.example.net. So in real life, you know, you could be browsing, you could be sending an email, and so on. So here our objective is to, or the client's objective is to browse this website and then download the web page. So when the client sends the request, okay, I need www.example.net, basically the client is requesting for the IP address of this web server. Now, this request will go to what we call a resolver. So the resolver can be usually in a typical environment, maybe if you're at home in a residence, it could be your ISP who provides that. If you are in a work environment, maybe your organization is providing this service. So usually this sort of service or the server that provides this service is called a recursive server. We can call a resolver or a recursive server or a caching server. Now, that server gets the request from the client and then send the request to root servers. Now, there are, as we know, there are a number of root servers scattered around. So the request will go to the root servers, and then the root server will give a response or a sort of reference to talk to the next level. As we all know, in the DNS hierarchy, the next level is the TLD level. So in this example, the TLD level is .NET. So the reference comes from the root server to go and talk to the .NET main server. And then the recursive server or the caching server will go and talk to the .NET main server and ask the same question. I need the IP address of www.example.net. And then .NET main server will respond with the IP address of the next level, which is the authoritative main server for example.net. And then the resolver or the recursive server gets that information and goes and contacts the authoritative server related to that example.net zone and gets the relevant or the correct web server IP address. So the authoritative answer comes from the name server of example.net. It could be one name server, they could be having multiple name servers as well. So once the resolver or the caching server gets that answer will be passed on to the client. So client gets the IP address, now the client can go and visit www.example.net or the web server of example.net and then download the web page. So this is how a simple DNS query gets resolved. So now moving on to now the next slide here. So during that process, we saw that there were a number of components that we saw. We had a client, we had a resolver, the recursive server, we had root servers, we had other name servers like authoritative name servers and so on. Now, in this DNS ecosystem, with this, all these DNS name servers, there are some certain risks that we encounter. One of the common attacks are called reflection and amplification attacks. Now, when the client send the request to these recursive servers, The recursive servers are given sort of a question to go and find and then respond to back to the client. But in case if there is some attacker who would spoof the IP address or the identity of a certain other client and then pretend to be that client and then send that request to the recursive server, then unfortunately, the recursive server will, instead of replying to that client who really asked the question, it will respond to the spoofed identity. So this is where actually these sort of reflection and amplification attacks would come. So the, in the case of amplification attacks, the answer is quite big in size, so the bandwidth will be highly utilized. Now, this can be worse actually in the form of what we call DDoS attacks or distributed denial of services or reflection and amplification. Now here the thing that the attacker could control number of or send number of queries, requests to number of these open recursive servers. Why I would say open recursive servers? Because they would they would get the answer from any source. That's why we call open. Usually, if you have a recursive server, if you have your recursive DNS server in your organization, you know, better way to do is you accept the queries only from your clients. But there are lots of networks out there who would, or the DNS servers, these recursive name servers would accept the answer or the queries from not only from their clients, but also from any other party. This is very bad. There are sort of millions of open recursive servers out there. So the attackers, they can get use of these opportunities, and then they can send these fake or spoofed queries so that the answers would go to innocent parties and then DDoS-type attacks. So the resources will be fully utilized, the bandwidth will be utilized, the processing power will be utilized, and then the servers can crash. So these are some of the common threats that we have. Cache poisoning is another another DNS threat because here what happens is that if you remember that recursive DNS server that we discussed, once it gets these answers, it keeps the answers in its memory or in the cache. So when the next time when a client asks similar type of question, the same question, it can respond to that other client in a very quickly way because it doesn't now have to go and talk to root name servers or other authoritative name servers. So the answers can be very quickly. So this is because they keep caches. They keep those answers in the memory. But unfortunately, if someone try to pollute this cache or poison this cache, then the recursive servers can answer or give wrong answers. Can they can behave differently and give wrong answers. So this is what we call cache poisoning. Sometimes some attacker, some miscreant can try to actually create, they can go and buy a domain name and create some, you know, domain name or a website, and then they could actually get their users, get the DNS queries, and then when the DNS servers respond, they can also actually, along with those responses, they can send some other responses related to other DNS name servers, so the caching server memory or the caching servers can keep wrong answers related to others. So these are all threats that happen in the DNS space. So cache poisoning is something that happens very commonly. There's another common threat, which is what we call DNS hijacking or query interceptions. Usually, when these DNS queries are being asked by the servers, say if the attacker hacks into a DNS server itself, or it could be that to the router, access point, and so on, somehow the objective here is that they would redirect the query into one of the DNS servers or the recursive servers controlled by them so that they can, instead of query being answered by the correct, genuine DNS server, now the query is being answered by the attacker. So they can always redirect you. Say, for example, if you're looking for www.example.net, they could redirect you to a web page that goes to a wrong website hosted by the attacker, basically. And sometimes, you know, it could be a financial institute website, a bank website, and so on. So you get to the wrong page, and you may give your credentials and so on to the wrong party. So these are all some DNS threats that we can see in the real life. So this is also why, actually, we have to pay attention to the DNS security aspects. It is very important that we secure our DNS infrastructure. Now, in this slide, you can see the usual components we see in a typical DNS ecosystem. Usually, you would see what we call primary and secondary DNS name servers. These are what we call authoritative name servers. So, for example, if we have a domain or if we have a zone called example.net, the administrators of that zone would maintain name servers, a primary name server, to provide that name service for example.net. And in the same way, if we only have a primary name server, in case if there is an attack comes to the primary, if that goes down, then there is no redundancy. That is why we have to have another redundancy or another server or multiple name servers, what we call secondary name servers, so that in case if one of these name servers are down, still secondary name servers can respond with the answers. So that's why we have this concept of primaries and secondaries. The primary name servers, in the primary name servers, the zone administrators, the DNS administrators, they would maintain the DNS databases. Simply, in a technical term, we call those as zone files. So we write the zone files. And then these zone files has to be transmitted or transferred to our secondaries so that we can maintain the consistency between primaries and secondaries. And then we also have those recursive name servers or caching name servers that we discussed. Usually the clients, when you query for a website, when you send an email and so on, to find that answer, find the IP address or, you know, the expected answer, you would go and talk to these caching servers. And then, in turn, the caching servers, as we discussed, they would go and talk to root name servers, the TLD name servers, and finally, they would arrive at these authoritative name servers, which is our primary and the secondaries. So the queries can come into those, get the responses from them, and then send the responses back to the client or the resolvers. So in this process, there are number of data flows and components that we can see. The question is where we are vulnerable, if someone wants to attack us, where can these attacks can be? So this is a question that we have to ask. Unfortunately, get attacked anywhere. In your DNS infrastructure, you can see that there can be various type of attacks can come. DNS is vulnerable. So, for example, the corrupting of zone files can happen. Then impersonation can happen. Say, for example, if you are a primary, you are giving your zone files to your secondary. So how do you know whether you are talking really to your secondary? And if you are the secondary, how do you know whether you are really talking to your primary name server? There could be always impersonation. Someone can pretend to be you. There are called dynamic updates. So there could be some remote updates can come into our DNS servers and get our DNS servers updated. So if we are expecting those remote updates, we have to make sure that we check the authenticity of those. Then we have our caching servers, and I mentioned you about cache pollution or cache poisoning type of attacks. So, and then, those type of data corruption are also there. So that is why our DNS infrastructure, we have to analyze properly and understand which mechanism or which security mechanism we should use to protect our DNS infrastructure. In this slide, you can see that some of the arrows are shown in red. Some of the arrows are shown in black. So we have different type of security mechanisms to protect those. We have, you know, primarily we have two types. One is called the server protection side, and the other one is called data protection side. So the black arrows, you know, you can see those black arrows in the places where we can use security mechanisms to protect our servers. Whereas in the red arrows, you can see we can use those security mechanisms to protect our data. Now, here we'll see, okay, what is this data protection and what is this server protection? Now, when we get to server protection, we are talking about two aspects again. One is obviously protecting our servers physically, right? So which means, you know, even to your data center, we have to have proper physical security and you know, the login to your machines and things like that, you know, proper physical security aspects. And then we also have another security mechanism in DNS. This is to protect server transactions. So this is called transaction signatures, and this is an RFC itself, request for commands. So it's a standard, and we TSIG in simply, you know, to identify this particular security mechanism. It's called TSIG, or transaction signatures. So TSIG can protect these server transactions. So, for example, if you have a primary name server and if you have a secondary name server, the transactions happen between these primary and secondary name servers can be protected using the security mechanism, what we call TSIG or transaction signatures. And then the next security mechanism, which is very important as well, that is to protect our data. So the data protection, that is the objective here. Now, here, the security mechanism we use is called DNSSEC. Maybe you have heard about this security mechanism quite a lot. DNSSEC has been there for quite a while. People have been discussing about it quite, you know, for quite some time. There has been a lot of updates, discussions happening as well. So this is to protect our data. So to achieve authenticity and the integrity of our data. Say, for example, we want to visit a certain website. We want to know whether are we going to the right place. And also, the integrity of this data, you know, are we really seeing the right, you know, the correct data? You know, that's what we want to achieve here in DNSSEC. So these are security mechanisms that we try to achieve to protect our DNS infrastructure. Now, I would try to spend a little bit of time on DNSSEC or pay some emphasis here on DNSSEC because that's quite important. Here we use public key cryptography. Say, for example, we keys. You know, this is a mechanism which involves keys, key-based security mechanisms. Now, when I say keys, we will have private keys and public keys. Say, for example, if you want to really know whether this is my data, how can you verify that it's really my data, whether it's really me? So that can be done by using a signature or a digital signature. I will basically sign this data. So if I'm publishing some data, I will publish that data and I will sign that data. So I will sign those data using my private key. That's why actually I will have two type of keys. One is what we call a private key and the other one is what we call a public key. So I will sign my data using my private key so that I will generate a signature for that. Then I will publish this signature. But I will make sure that I keep my private key safely. Others cannot see that because that's supposed to be my private key. Now, then how can then someone verify whether it's really my signature? So that can be verified using my public key. So for that, I have to publish my public key as well. So I would publish my public key, and then also I would publish my signatures that are associated with my data. So this is the basic mechanism in DNSSEC. So now you can see, if you refer to this slide now, if you refer to that previous DNS query process that I went through, is the same thing happening just like before. But only difference here is that all those answers now we are getting from those DNS servers, they have been verified using the signature. So there is a signature associated. So there is a signature attached to that information that I'm getting, so that always I can verify that signature using the appropriate public keys. So this is what we try to achieve in DNSSEC. Okay, now quickly moving on to DNSSEC, so which is again a very important security mechanism in protecting our DNS data. Now, at the root, now DNSSEC actually, as we understood, DNS is a hierarchy. So you have root, then you have TLDs, then you have next levels, and so on. So to verify this whole security mechanism or the verification process, we have to go all the way to the top. So that means, say, for example, if a child, you know, child has to make, you know, pass this propagation of trust, basically, to its parent. And then the parent has to pass that to parent's parent, and so on, and all the way up to the root. So that's why the root zone has been signed, and we have keys for the root zone. So this whole channel has to be fulfilled so that we can have that verification process. The root has been signed. So next level after that is the TLD level. So in the TLD level, I can, you know, I'm showing a map here. So this is actually a map of CCTLDs, the country code top level domains in the world, who has signed their zones, or we can say DNSSEC deployed. So all those green areas, you can see the countries in those green, they have deployed DNSSEC, they have signed their zones. So that means actually the domains below that, they can also sign their zones and send or propagate the trust to its parent, which is the CCTLD. And then CCTLD can propagate the trust to the root. Right? So that's how the mechanism works. Now, these are also some statistics you can see. This is at the TLD level. So you can see that about 80% of the TLD today, they have signed their zone. So that means deployed DNSSEC. So about 80% of those. But beyond that, it's very, you know, it's not much. It's a very small percentage. The second level domains, it's a very small percentage. The graph, you can see that in the last 3 years, we saw a big jump, you know, the curve. Curve has been very sort of lenient before 2013, but after 2013, you can see the curve is steadily growing because in the new RAA, the registrar agreement, DNSSEC, or the registrar agreement, the DNSSEC, is already there as a requirement there. So that is why actually you could see, especially the new GTLDs and so on, you know, they would deploy DNSSEC, and we can see more and more TLDs are deploying DNSSEC now. So this is from a statistical point of view for you to think about. Now, you could be from enterprise level, you could be from, say, you know, financial institutions, universities, or other enterprises and organizations and so on. Now, if you are from that such organization, something to think about, have you really signed or deployed DNSSEC at your, you know, at your level, in your zone? Sometimes when we speak to a lot of these, you know, enterprise level or second level type of owners, we see that, you know, they would respond, they say, you know, sometimes our technical staff, they are not still capable of handling DNSSEC. Sometimes they would say, okay, we are not ready yet. There is still some fear, uncertainty, and doubt about DNSSEC, maintaining DNSSEC, and so on. Also, sometimes we hear that, you know, clients would tell that, okay, our ISP is not providing that, they are not actually doing the validation, so, you know, we can't really do much. And then, but when we ask the ISPs or the operators, registrars, and so on, they would say that, our clients are not really asking about it, so we don't see much of a demand there. So this is something kind of a chicken and egg situation as well. So it's actually for you to think about what sort of difficulties you have. Bottom line is that it's a very important security mechanism for you to implement, at least start from now. start from a test environment. You don't have to go, you know, tomorrow and try to do it in a production environment. You can always try to attend training courses. I can do offer training courses on DNSSEC. There are various other organizations, bodies who offer DNSSEC workshops, training courses as well. So try to gather knowledge about this security mechanism and then try to implement DNSSEC in your organizations, in your zones and domains. Okay, now let's actually spend a little bit of time on trying to focus a bit more on to handling DNS abuse. So we had a discussion about DNS security and so on. Now, because our DNS, you know, if our DNS infrastructure is not safe enough, miscreants, the attackers and so on, they can use our DNS infrastructure for various sort of abuses. There are lots of common uses for registering malicious domains. You know, these domains can be used to sell counterfeit goods or various data exfiltrations or to launch some attacks, sell various, you know, illegal pharmaceuticals and so on, malware command and control, phishing type of attacks. We normally get email scams and so on, right? There are lots of 419 type scams. So all these are done because if our DNS infrastructure is not safe enough and people, miscreants, try to abuse those services and infrastructure. Now, also actually, they can abuse the miscreants, they can abuse other people's domain and DNS infrastructures as well. So, for example, without you knowingly, your DNS infrastructure can be used by them. They could use your DNS servers. They could use your mail servers. They can use your name servers and so on. They can change the configurations so that earlier we discussed some of those type of attacks as well. So your query, instead of going to your DNS name servers, they could be receiving those DNS queries. So these are various type of abuses that the miscreants, attackers, then they can launch. And sometimes, you know, the abusers, they can acquire these DNS resources by various ways. They can, for example, they can purchase domain names by using stolen credit cards or some compromised accounts. Sometimes there are lots of free services available. They can abuse these free services available. So in case if you're providing some free services, this is something to think about, because lots of miscreants, attackers, they would go and get domain names in free rations and so on. Also leverage, you know, proper bulletproof, what we call bulletproof or gray hat hosting. I mean, genuine providers, they can use them to exploit them. And also, they can hack legitimate hosts as well, as I mentioned you before. And also, sometimes when we deal with our domain name accounts, our registrars would provide us a web interface, web account for us to manage our credentials, details, and so on. So the attackers can get our credentials by various ways, and they can try to change our name servers inside those profiles, inside those portals and so on, and then they can actually try to get control over that. So these are various ways how the abusers, they can actually use our DNS resources as well. So when we, in organization level, if we are going to handle these abusers, it's always good to pay attention to some of those items such as listed in this slide. Say, for example, in the WHOIS database, contact details, privacy protection service details, because if there are some privacy protection service providers, try to, you know, evaluate them and get their details in case if you want to handle some incidences. Values related to your DNS zone files, zone data, details about your DNS name server. Sometimes if you do some abuse handling, if you find some suspicious DNS name servers and suspicious hosting locations, you know, always these are things that you should try to find more information about. So all these listed items are quite important when we handle DNS headers, even your mail headers. If you are trying to analyze different mails and so on, try to go and check the mail headers and what are the suspicious looking ones and so on. So I think, you know, these points that what we discussed so far focuses on the DNS security, different DNS security mechanisms, DNSSEC and so on, and also DNS abuses. So at this point, let's try to stop for a little while and take a pop quiz. And Yasin, over to you.
Thank you very much, Champika. Yes, we do have some pop quiz questions for you. They'll now appear on the right-hand side of the screen.
Okay, it's interesting, actually. The question was, let me go to the question. So question is actually, securing DNS is important because I can see no one actually picked the first one. Domain names can be spoofed. In fact, it is one of the reasons, right? And there are multiple correct answers here. So first one is a correct answer because domain names can be spoofed, and that's why securing DNS is important. I told you, like, we can go into wrong websites and so on. The domain names can be spoofed. Caches can be poisoned. I think we discussed that as well. Some people have answered that correctly. Yes. Now, third one is DNS is a centralized database. Unfortunately, this is wrong. I can see that there are a number of people who have answered that because DNS is not really a centralized database. DNS is a distributed database, so it's a correct answer. And D, DNS servers can be impersonated, yes. So whoever responded that, that is a correct answer, DNS servers can be impersonated. And then the last one is none of the above, which is not correct. So the correct answers are A, B, and D. I think we can go to the next question.
Chantika?
Yes?
Sure, Chantika. Apologies for not being able to read out the questions because I lost my connection. And quickly I'll move on to the second question. The second question is, what's the main objective of DNSSEC? A, protecting DNS data. B, protecting DNS servers. C, protecting both DNS data and DNS servers. C, encrypting DNS queries, and is none of the above. Please cast your votes now.
I think the comment here that you cannot choose more than one answer, maybe it's not tick boxes, probably it's radio buttons, maybe that's why. I think that's a bit of a technical glitch there, but yeah, so... The answers are supposed to be yes. There can be more than one answer. Sorry if you cannot tick more than one answer, though. Okay, let's try to evaluate that. So the question is, what is the main objective of DNSSEC? As I mentioned you before, the main objective of DNSSEC is to protect the DNS data, right? So the correct answer is A, protecting DNS data. The second one is protecting DNS servers. That's not really achieved, or that's not objective of DNSSEC. I told you there are other security mechanisms like, you know, TSIG and so on. So that is to protect our DNS servers. So the C is also not correct because it's not to protect both DNS data and DNS servers. And then the D is encrypting DNS queries. No, we are actually not encrypting DNS queries here because, you know, DNS data is all public data, so we are not really encrypting that. So that's not the correct answer either. So the last one is also not correct. There is none of the above that's not correct as well. Okay, I hope that that gave some understanding. So now I will actually quickly discuss the next few slides on with regard to DNS abuse handling. Now there are various tools and techniques, and also we can contribute to some of the policies and guidelines in terms of handling DNS abuses. So when you handle DNS abuses, there are a number of resources that can be useful. Say, for example, the domain names. Domain names are very much useful because these are all internet identifiers. Then the IP addresses. IP address is also very important because that's also an internet identifier, one of the primary internet identifiers. AS numbers, or what we call autonomous system numbers. So these are all quite used resources. Now, there are various tools that can find more information about these identifiers, because when we try to find the source, say for example, where are these, who is abusing these, from which network these abuses happen, or from which registrar who actually has given these domain names, things like that. So always finding more information can be always helpful. Whois database is one of the very important resources that you should look into in terms of tools. And also there are various other tools available. Especially if you're working more in a technical environment, there are tools where you can use in different operating systems and so on. You can find more sophisticated details, especially for organizations like law enforcement and so on. And whatever the case, actually, if you're finding more details using these tools, it's always good to keep a record, because the miscreants, they would actually, they would not keep these information for a very long time. So what you find today may not be available tomorrow, or what you find now may not be available in the next 10 minutes possibly, right? So that's why it's always, it's a good practice to keep a record of what you do, what you find. At least try to document those. Keep some logs of those. Save the logs. These are always useful. From a policy perspective or guidelines perspective, it's always important to talk to correct parties or get involved with the policy development processes when collecting abuses. You can deal with registrars. If you are dealing with registrars, domain operators, ISPs, and so on, acceptable user policies are very important to look into, because usually these sort of operators, providers, and so on, they should actually provide their policy in AUPs. Whois database and accuracy is quite important. Dealing with national cert, law enforcement, ICANN compliance is also very important. From ICANN perspective, there are various working groups, there are various WHOIS working groups, public safety working groups, and so on, that you can contribute to these policies and processes as well. So I think now at this stage, let us actually go to our other presenter, my friend Kittisak, who will discuss some of the case studies that he normally handles in an operational environment, so that you get a practical understanding as well to these aspects.
Okay, thank you, Champika, and hello everyone. My name is Kittisak Kiramakun. I would like to share you about the incident cases in Thailand. Well, actually, I prepare for you two cases. The first case is, the scenario is one day when we monitor our system and we find something strange on our dashboard. We use Cactic, which is an open source tool for monitoring performance of server. And user cannot resolve domain name for the domain because of DNS server does not work properly. And when we look to the percentage of CPU utilization, it's high and also swing quickly. And when we check at the session, concurrent session of the server, it seems normal. Then, when we investigate more, we monitor at the firewall. When we check and we file, there are too many requests from many sources. And also, our next generation firewall said, this is DNS any query boot for attack. And also, IP address, all of attacker IP address are spoofed. And we cannot track the real attacker. But we have to learn the pattern of attacker. For example, group of IP or country. And fortunately, in my case, all of source IP came from only one country. And I used the database to check randomly the country of the IP address. This case is consume all resource of DNS server. It's of course this DDoS attack. So DNS any query boot for attack. This is the case that attacker spoof IP address and send many requests with every type of DNS record. For example, attacker want to attack by send a query webabc.goth with a CNAME record or MX type and A type as well. What did we do to respond this case? First thing, we filter based on different criteria, the group of IP address or country. And also, we add a whitelist to allow only our client be able to solve domain name. This one needs to be consideration about organization policy as well. In some cases, attackers send requests by using non-existent domain. We have to reject this kind of request too. The second scenario, we monitor our firewall and we find there are several queries requests from client to outside. That means the client didn't use our DNS server. The signature of the firewall said this is a model DNS request traffic. And of course, this is blocked by our firewall already. When we find more information, and we found that motto is a type internet verb and botnet, and itself send command through query request. It looks like a normal DNS query behavior. Okay. So this is the explanation of this kind of attack. User got infected by MotoWorm and sent a command through the DNS record to the CNC server, which is DNS server outside of organization. How can we respond? If you find requests from outside, that means possibly your DNS server are hacked and use it as a CNC server. In this case, we need to patch and improve security of the DNS servers. The second choice option, that means if you file requests to outside, it's possibly your client got infected by malware, so you need to use anti-malware to clean it. And also, for the management level, we have to create the internal policy. And of course, we have to work with other third and find the best solution to fight against this kind of malware. So this is all of my presentation, so I need to pass back to Jampika.
Okay, thank you, Kirisak. Now we have come to the last part of this webinar. Now this is more about collaboration with ICANN. Now, in ICANN, we have a team or we have a program, SSR. SSR stands for Security, Stability, and Resiliency Team. Now, SSR team, actually, we deal with many of these type of security issues, many of these actually incidents and so on. So the collaboration with SSR related work with ICANN is very important. Now, you may be coming from various organizations. You can see this in the slide. We do work very closely with, say, for example, governments, the law enforcement bodies, the domain operators, the regional internet registries, the national certs, the network operators, and so on. There are a number of other parties as well. So if you belong to these sort of groups, it's always you can be involved with SSR work, with ICANN. So trust-based collaboration is something that we can always achieve to make sure we can always achieve to make the internet secure, stable, and resilient, and keep it very healthy. Training and outreach is also something that the SSR team provides. If you think that there are some capacity building that you need, in fact, we discussed before, if your organization, if your communities would like to have some more in-depth, maybe hands-on type training on security, DNS, DNSSEC, DNS abuse handling, and so on, using those tools that we discussed and so on, we can always support you, assist you, and so on. So do try to be involved, work with us, collaborate with us, and also ultimately contribute to those policies that we discuss and to those working groups that what we mentioned. So this is what actually what we wanted to wrap up. And finally, we have a very quick pop quiz. Maybe we can take a minute or so to do this.
Hi, Champike. Sure. Let's move on to our third question then. Our third question is, following evidences can be helpful to handle DNS abuses. Questionable, whose data? Notorious name servers, frequently browsing users, suspicious mail headers, all of the above. Please catch your words now. And the correct answer, Champika, or the answers maybe?
Okay, I think everyone has got it correctly over there, mostly most of you, I think. The correct answers are A, B, and D, of course. So it's always, you know, helpful to have those questionable who is data, the notorious name servers, and the suspicious mail headers. Not really the number C, which is frequently browsing users, and then E is not all of the above correct either, because C is not correct. We can quickly go to the next question. The last one.
Sure, here you are. The last one is, policies and guidelines with regard to following can enhance the efficiency of handling DNS abuse. Evidence collection, dealing with registrars, dealing with national CERTs, coordination with law enforcement bodies, none of the above. Please catch your words now. And the correct answer, Champika, is?
Okay, as we can put multiple answers, actually A, B, C, and D are correct. So not the last one. None of the above is not correct. So A, B, C, and D are correct. Because you can work with them, right? All those mentioned authorities, mentioned entities, and you can contribute to the policies and guidelines as well. So I think, thank you very much. I think that wraps up our presentation, our webinar for today. So just to mention about the summary, so we started with the threats and risks in DNS. I mentioned about some possible, very commonly type of attacks that we see in DNS. And then I mentioned you why the DNS security is important. I've talked about those different security mechanisms, protecting DNS servers, protecting DNS data. We talked about DNSSEC as well a little bit in detail. Then we had a chat about DNS abuse handling, how the miscreants, they can use our DNS resources. And then we mentioned about tools and techniques, talk about some case studies, and finally the collaboration with ICANN and with some quizzes. Hope this session has been useful to you. And if you have any questions, we can spend a few minutes in case if you have any questions.
Thank you so much, Shantika. And also, thank you so much, Kitty Sak. That was very informative. I know that we are past the hour, so I'll hand over to Sylvia to take over for the Q&A as well as the survey.
Thank you very much, Kelvin and Champika and Kitty Sak. Excellent presentations. Please, if you would like to ask some questions, raise your hand, or you can type it on the chat, and I will read it for our presenters. I'm checking now the chat. This is Sylvia. I do not see any questions at the moment. Just responding to Holly, yes, the presentations are already put on the wiki page, on this meeting's wiki page. So you can download the presentations and you will be able to listen to the recording as well. I have a question from Maureen Hilliard. Is SSR related to SSSAC? As I think this is for Champika.
Okay, SSAC stands for Security Stability Advisory Committee. So that is actually an advisory committee within the ICANN, as the ICANN community, right? In ICANN, it's a framework that the advisory committee basically provides advisory to the ICANN. And whereas SSR is a team within the ICANN operational, within the organization, and that involves, in fact, we work closely with SSAC as well, and also to work closely with the community and to deal with the SSR or security-related matters and contents, do capacity building and engagement as well. So that's the sort of difference. Whereas SSR is a function ICANN, whereas SSAC is an advisory committee.
Thank you very much, Champika, for this very useful information. I see no further questions. Let me check. I don't see any hands at the moment. Okay, so I believe we don't have additional questions, but of course, if you are interested, you can always send an email to the presenters, and they will be happy to reply, and staff, at large staff, will be happy to convey those questions to the presenters. So if you have more questions for later on, please feel free to email us with those. And now I will turn it over to Yeshin to start an evaluation survey. So please be so kind to stay with us just for 4 minutes to complete the evaluation survey. Go ahead, Yeshin.
Thank you very much, Sylvia. Let me quickly go over the questions. Our first question is, the captioning feature of the Adobe Connect Room is part of a pilot. Please choose the suitable term. Very helpful, helpful, less relevant, not helpful. Please catch your words now. Thank you very much. I'll now quickly move on to our second question. Please self-identify all categories that describe who you are. A person with disabilities, participant for whom English is a second language, participant who doesn't speak English, participant who has limited or low bandwidth, none of the above. Please catch your words now. Thank you very much for this one as well. Moving on to our third question. What benefits did you get from accessing the captioning stream? Choose as many answers as possible. Greater understanding of the topics,
ability to understand the session more effectively, provided the correct spelling of technical terminology, personal benefits of being appreciated, able to more fully participate and engage with the presenter. Please catch your words now. And quickly moving on to the next question. What benefits did you get from accessing the captioning stream? If there are any others than we have just mentioned before, please type your answers here in the blank space, and please do not forget to click on the icon just next to it in order to send the answers. I'll be waiting for a short time for the answers. Here we are, we have one already. Thank you very much. Let me move on to next question then. Where else do you think captioning should be required? Working groups, task forces, ad hoc groups, railo calls, ELA calls, CCWG calls, and our other constituencies. Please catch your words now, and remember you can choose more than one option here. Thank you very much for your votes. Let's quickly move on to our fifth question, the next question. How do you rank today's session in terms of quality of information? Please vote from 1 to 5, 1 as very poor and 5 as very good. Please catch your votes now. Thank you very much. Moving on with the next question. How was all the presenters' delivery? Please catch your words now. One as very poor and 5 as very good. And quickly to our question number 8. Do you plan on using any of the information directly with our at-large structure? Please catch your words now. It's a yes or no question. So, for the ones who have answered as yes, we have a following question for you here. If yes, please explain. Again, please type your answers in the blank space and do not forget to just click on the icon next to it so we can all see the answers. Recommendations about the content of this session. Please type your answers in the blank space and again, please do not forget to click on the icon next to it to post the answers.
Okay, I have put my contact details at the end of the slide, so feel free to send an email or talk to any of our, we have a customer service help desk as well in the APAC hub. You can write to them as well, and they will be in touch with me. And then depending on your requirement, we can have some further discussion.
Thank you very much, Champika, and this was the end of the survey questions. So over to you, Kelvin. Would you like to add anything?
Okay.
Sure. Okay, thank you. All that's left for me to say is to thank the speakers, Champika and Kittisak, and all the feedback that you have received as a testament to the good work that you have done. And also thank you to the Alarch team, Sylvia and Yasin, for putting this together. And thank you, of course, to everyone who has stayed with us until now and completing the survey, which was very important to us. So I'll close this webinar and return you back to your work. All fun. See you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you all. Very nice talking to you all.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone, for this crisis saving. The recording will now be disconnected. Have a lovely day.